Obviously, Phyllis Wheatley is a lesser known figure in regard to the audience that I have today. So, but nevertheless, we will proceed forward. My name is Dustin Binge. I'm a PhD student here at Southern under Dr. Haken. I'm kind of midway through the program, hope to begin dissertation work at some point next year on Martin Lloyd Jones. I am an associate pastor right now at Christ Fellowship Baptist Church in Mobile, Alabama, where Steve Lawson was until exactly 16 weeks ago. I only know it's been 16 weeks because I took upon the preaching responsibilities after he left on Sunday mornings, and I've been preaching 16 weeks. So that's how I know. My wife, we both live in Mobile, of course. She is a fifth grade teacher in the Mobile school system. And I think that's about it. I'm a junior fellow of the Andrew Fuller Center. And this is my second conference to present a paper to. So I'm very happy to be here. I was asked at the very beginning to possibly present on David Brainerd, who I have done some work on previously. And, of course, his very famous connection with Jonathan Edwards. However, Dr. Haken came back and said, why don't you join the women and do something on Phyllis Wheatley? Prior to that, the only thing I knew of Phyllis was that she had written the elegy or the very beautiful poem at Whitfield's death. And if we have time, I would like to read you the poem in full at the end. Phyllis Wheatley was seized from Gambia, West Africa, when she was about 7 years old. She arrived in Boston Harbor on July 11th, 1761, with a shipment of refugee slaves who, because of age or physical frailty, were unsuited for rigorous labor in the West Indian and Southern colonies, which were the first ports of call after the Atlantic crossing. In August 1761, in want of a domestic, Susanna Wheatley, wife of prominent Boston tailor John Wheatley, purchased a slender, frail female child. The captain of the slave ship believed the girl to be terminally ill, and wanting to gain at least a small profit before she died, sold the frail creature to Mr. Wheatley for a trifle. A relative of the Wheatley family later reported the girl was of slender frame and evidently suffering from a change of climate. Nearly naked, with no other covering than a quantity of dirty carpet about her. To be about 7 years old from the circumstances of shedding her front teeth. One early poem describes her journey from Africa to the New World. "'Twas mercy brought me from my pagan land, taught my benighted soul to understand that there's a God, that there's a Savior too. Once I redemption neither sought nor knew. Some view our sable race with a scornful eye. Their color is a diabolic dye. Remember, Christians, Negroes black as Cain may be refined and join the angelic train." From the Boston docks, the frail, ailing child traveled to the Wheatley home, an evangelical home at the corner of King Street and Mackerel Lane, one block from the old State House, which was the seat of British colonial government from 1713 to 1776. Phyllis, named after the slave ship that bore her to the colonies, was educated by the Wheatley's daughter, Mary, and her twin brother, Nathaniel. She was soon immersed in the Bible, astronomy, geography, and history. At 12, she began studying Latin and English literature, especially the poetry of Alexander Pope, soon translating the Greek philosophers into heroic couplets. These would have been remarkable accomplishments for an educated white male boy, and were virtually unheard of for white females, and of course, completely foreign for African males or females of any type. She may well have read during her young study years Anne Bradstreet's poetry. The Wheatleys appreciated her poetic and intellectual talents and began showing her off to their friends. Many came to visit with this lively and brilliant conversationalist. In addition to her extensive liberal education, she was thoroughly indoctrinated into the Calvinistic theology of Congregationalism. In what was probably the first poem she wrote to the University of Cambridge in New England, not published until 1773, Wheatley indicated that despite this rich education and exposure, quite unusual for an American slave, to say the least, her spirit yearned for the intellectual challenge of a more academic atmosphere. I thought that was a very interesting quote, specifically having received by far an education superior to even white male children of the colonies, let alone an African slave. During a time when African Americans were discouraged and even intimidated from learning how to read and write, Wheatley's life was an anomaly. Phyllis soon began to demonstrate remarkable ability in her composition of the English language in poetic form. Her first published piece was believed to be On Mrs. Hussey and Coffin, a poem about two men who almost drowned in a storm at sea, published on December 21st, 1767, in the Newport, Rhode Island Mercury, when Wheatley was just 13 years old. Like many of her later and more famous poems, it alluded to Greek gods and to her own Puritan faith. In 1768, she wrote To the King's Most Excellent Majesty, in which she praised King George III for repealing the Stamp Act. As the American Revolution gained in strength and popularity, Wheatley's writing turned to themes that expressed ideas of the rebellious colonists. Because many white people of the time found it quite hard to believe a black woman could be so intelligent in writing poetry, Wheatley had to defend her literary ability in court in 1772. She was examined by a group of Boston luminaries, including John Irving, Reverend Charles Chauncey — he seems to always show up, doesn't he? — John Hancock, Thomas Hutchinson, the governor of Massachusetts, and his lieutenant governor, Andrew Oliver. They concluded that she had in fact written the poems ascribed to her and signed an attestation, which was published in the preface to her book, Poems on Various Subjects, Religious and Moral, published in London in 1773. Wheatley believed the power of poetry was immeasurable. John Shields notes that her poetry did not simply reflect novels which she read, but was based on her personal ideas and beliefs. Shields writes, "Wheatley had more in mind than simple conformity." The poem that brought Wheatley celebrity recognition was On the Death of the Reverend George Whitefield, published in the October 1st, 1770 issue of the Massachusetts Spy. George Whitefield set sail for his final trip across the Atlantic in 1769, after numerous preaching tours throughout the colonies and establishing the famous Bethesda Orphanage and School in Georgia. The ocean crossing was very difficult and dangerous, further draining his already depleted energy. Whitfield arrived in Charleston, where he wholeheartedly preached to large crowds for 10 consecutive days. He traveled south into Georgia, where he remained for the duration of the winter of 1769 to 1770. In late spring, he traveled north to launch another extensive evangelistic campaign in Philadelphia, New York, and the greater cities of New England. Under the demands of his constant travel and tireless preaching efforts, his frail body began to show signs of deterioration. Whitfield preached his last sermon in Exeter, New Hampshire, on September 29, 1770. His sermon was titled, "Examine Yourself," with his text taken from 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5, and lasted 2 hours. As he stepped forward to preach, he uttered a silent prayer. "If I have not yet finished my course, let me go and speak for thee once more in the fields. Seal thy truth and come home and die." Afterward, the drained evangelist rode south by horse to Newburyport, Massachusetts, where he was to preach the next day at Old South Presbyterian Church. Upon arriving, he addressed a large gathering at the pastor's parsonage on Saturday evening. Having suffered all of his life with severe cardiac asthma, he found it difficult during the night to breathe. On Sunday morning, September 30th, 1770, at approximately 6 o'clock a.m., George Whitfield breathed his last. A Whitfield biographer wrote, "At the age of 55, the Prince of English Preachers was dead, a prince that hath no peer." Per his instruction, Whitfield was buried under the next pulpit in which he was to preach. Appropriately, his body was laid in the subterranean crypt under the pulpit of the Old South Presbyterian Church. Multiple funerals were held on both sides of the Atlantic to express sorrow and respects for this gifted servant. The service in Newburyport was attended by 6,000 people. So many ships crowded into the harbor that it could contain no more vessels. By 1770, Phyllis's owner, Susanna Wheatley, was well acquainted with George Whitfield and was probably through him an acquaintance of the Countess of Huntington, of which George Whitfield had been personal chaplain. On Whitfield's 6th trip to America in 1763, Whitfield stayed nearly 2 years in the colonies and spent many months in Boston, as was his custom. It was highly likely that he stayed at or even visited the Wheatley home. It is even more likely that Phyllis heard him preach then or on his final visit to the colonies in 1770. Wheatley's Ode to Whitfield, upon the occasion of his death, appeared in pamphlets and broadsides that were distributed in Boston, Newport, and Philadelphia, and within the year, that is 1770, and in London the following year. By the time she was 18, Wheatley had gathered a collection of 28 poems for which, with the help of Mrs. Wheatley, ran advertisements for subscribers in Boston newspapers in February 1772. When the colonists were apparently unwilling to support literature by an African woman, she and the Wheatleys turned in frustration to London for a publisher. A year earlier, Wheatley had forwarded the Whitfield poem to Selina Hastings, the Countess of Huntington. A wealthy supporter of evangelical and abolitionist causes, the Countess instructed bookseller Archibald Bell to begin correspondence with Wheatley in preparation for her first published book of poetry. Lady Huntington is the dedicatee of Phyllis Wheatley's Ode on Whitfield's Death, as well as the patroness of her book published in 1773. In 1771, Wheatley traveled to London, accompanied by Nathaniel Wheatley, that is, the son, and was welcomed by nobility and high society in celebration of her forthcoming book. Poems on various subjects, religious and moral, released September the 1st, 1773, was the first book of poetry published by an African American. Wheatley was 20 years old. However, on returning to Boston, Phyllis discovered Mrs. Wheatley had become gravely ill. 3 months before Mrs. Wheatley's death, on March the 3rd, 1774, the family freed Phyllis from slavery. The years that followed were burdensome for Wheatley, who was often ill herself and had, until then, been sheltered from both the treacheries of slavery and the economic discrimination of a free black existence. In 1775, Wheatley sent her poem, of course, she's now a free woman, to His Excellency George Washington. She sent the poem to Washington himself, who responded with a letter of thanks and said he would be happy to see a person so favored by the muses and to whom nature has been so liberal and beneficent in her dispensations. She did visit him later, months after he was named Commander-in-Chief of the armies of North America. The Pennsylvania Gazette, edited by Thomas Paine, republished To His Excellency General Washington in 1776 as a means of glorifying Washington's deeds. No doubt, as a side note, it was partly Phyllis Wheatley that helped elevate General Washington in the minds and the pantheon of American history as Saint General George Washington. The poem is notable because it coins two common phrases still in use today. Wheatley's reference to the land of Columbus as Columbia was later used to describe the capital, the District of Columbia. She also refers to Washington as first in place and honors, and as a result of a misprint of her poem, it read first in peace, which is now a common phrase in reference to Washington. Following Mr. Wheatley's death on March the 12th, 1778, Phyllis married John Peters on April the 1st, 1778, despite the great disapproval of many of her friends. Peter was an entrepreneur who had also been freed from slavery, but was often in debt and of little financial help to his new wife. Poverty-stricken and in poor health, she was unable to publish her second book and had to work as a scullery maid. Despite this, she continued to write and publish single poems, which soliciting the few correspondents she maintained to support a second volume of work, which neither saw publication nor was ever recovered. Wheatley had three children, two of whom had died by the time she wrote her last published piece to a contemporary but unnamed couple, to Mr. and Mrs., on the death of their infant son in 1784. So as Phyllis is writing poetry in honor of the death of another's child, she herself has lost two children. Ultimately, Peter's moved his family to a rundown apartment and abandoned his pregnant wife while he dodged creditors and sought employment. On December the 5th, 1784, Wheatley died during childbirth in a boarding house when she was only 31 years old. Her remaining child died hours later. In a filthy apartment in an obscure part of the metropolis lay dying the mother and the wasting child, Margareta Matilda Odell lamented in her 1834 biography of Wheatley. She wrote, "The woman who had stood honored and respected in the presence of the wise and good was numbering the last hours of life in a state of the most abject misery, surrounded by all the emblems of squalid poverty." Wheatley's life was a cruel contradiction. She flourished while enslaved, writing about the troubling issues of freedom, religion, and patriotism. But she suffered dreadful circumstances in her freedom, resulting in an untimely, inhumane death. Scholars continue to discover more of her work, and it is believed she wrote 145 poems during her life. All this research and interpretation has proven Wheatley's disdain for the institution of slavery and her use of the art to undermine its practice, states scholar and essayist Sandra O'Neill. Before the end of this century, the full aesthetic, political, and religious implications of Wheatley's art, and even more salient facts about her life and works, will surely be known and celebrated by all who study the 18th century and by all who revere this woman, a most important poet in the American literary canon. Now, what I would read to you next would just be, we could say, an appendix of the poem of on George Whitefield himself. In 2001, the Beinecke Library at Yale University acquired a broadside of a poem by Phyllis Wheatley. This was the title, "An Ode of Verses on the Much-Lamented Death of the Reverend George Whitefield, late chaplain to the Countess of Huntington, who departed this life at Newbury near Boston in New England on the 30th of September 1770 in the 57th year of his age, composed in America by a Negro girl, 17 years of age, and sent over to a gentleman of character in London." That was the title. The broadside was printed and sold in London for the benefit of a poor family, burnt out a few weeks since near Shoreditch Church, that lost all they possessed, having nothing insured. The price for the broadside was a penny apiece, or 5 shillings. The bookseller who sold this copy to the Beinecke Library at Yale said that the Huntington Library held another broadside of the poem and that the pair were the only two copies known to still exist. A facsimile of the Huntington's broadside yielded a significant difference. The printer's ornaments, running down the center of the page and across the bottom, were not the same. The Beinecke's were crowns. The Huntington's were hourglasses. They were unique copies inserted somewhere in the complex printing history of this poem on the death of Whitefield in 1770 to the first printing of the Wheatley's only book, Poems on Various Subjects, that was published in London in 1773. So from 1770 to 1773, when the poem on Whitefield was published in her book, there had been changes to the poem itself. Now, I go on to talk about this a bit, but for the sake of time, I would just say that there are differences between the original poem in 1770 and what was published in London. Some of the differences are reflecting in London the condition of slavery in the American colonies. It's thought by some scholars that Wheatley herself edited the poem, and by others that someone else edited the poem for the sake of revealing the condition of the slave to English society from the Americas. There's an elaborate woodcut that was made for the 8-page booklet entitled A Poem by Phyllis, a Negro Girl in Boston on the Death of the Reverend George Whitfield. Whitfield is pictured dressed in wig, casket, clerical collar, and wristbands laid out on a low table beneath funeral drapes. In the foreground is a casket whose lid is decorated with carvings of a skull, a cross which has two figures, one perhaps crossed quill pens, and the inscription G.W. September 1770. The booklet was first printed in Boston, where it was sold by Ezekiel Russell and John Boyles. It was also available in Newport, Rhode Island, where it was reprinted and sold by S. Southwick. A copy of the Boston printing at Yale offers a crisp, bright woodcut in which all the details are clear. There is another copy of the poem, of the broadside, of the Newport printing at the New York Historical Society that has the same woodcut, but the woodcut is so degraded that the wristbands have disappeared and the letters inscribed on the casket are nearly illegible. It seems likely that the ornament used in Boston was sent to Newport for the reprint. And the story goes on and on and on in regard to comparing these copies, thinking about these copies, interpreting these copies, and interpreting Wheatley's words and phrases used in the poem. If you would allow me for the last few moments, I would like to read you On the Death of the Reverend Mr. George Whitfield, 1770, which this poem is placed as Wheatley's seventh poem in her first published book. Hail, happy saint on thy immortal throne. To thee, complaints of grievance are unknown. We hear no more the music of thy tongue. Thy wonted auditories cease to throng. Thy lessons in unequaled accents flowed, while emulation in each bosom glowed. Thou didst, in strains of eloquence refined, inflame the soul and captivate the mind. Unhappy we, the setting sun deplore, which once was splendid, but shines no more. He leaves this earth for heaven's unmeasured height, and worlds unknown receive him from our sight. There, Whitfield wings with rapid course his way, and sails to Zion through the vast seas of day. When his Americans were burdened sore, when streets were crimsoned with their guiltless gore, unrivaled friendship in his breast now strove, the fruit thereof was charity and love. Towards America, couldst thou do more than leave thy native home, the British shore? To cross the great Atlantic's watery road, to see America's distressed abode? Thy prayers, great saint, and thy incessant cries have pierced the bosom of thy native skies. Thou moon hast seen, and ye bright stars of light have witness been of his requests by night. He prayed that grace in every heart might dwell. He longed to see America excel. He charged its youth to let the grace divine arise and in their future actions shine. He offered that he did himself receive, a greater gift not God himself can give. He urged the need of him to everyone. It was no less than God's co-equal son. Take him, ye wretched, for your only good. Take him, ye starving souls, to be your food. Ye thirsty, come to his life-giving stream. Ye preachers, take him for your joyful theme. Take him, my dear Americans, he said, be your complaints in his kind bosom laid. Take him, ye Africans, he longs for you. Impartial Savior is his title due. If you will choose to walk in grace's road, you shall be sons and kings and priests to God. Great Countess, we Americans revere thy name and thus condole thy grief sincere. We mourn with thee that tomb obscurely placed in which thy chaplain undisturbed doth rest. New England, sure, both fill the orphan's smart, reveals the true sensations of his heart. Since this fair sun withdraws his golden rays, no more to brighten these distressful days. His lonely tabernacle sees no more a Whitfield landing on the British shore. Let us view him in yon azure skies. Let every mind with this loved object rise. No more can he exert his laboring breath, seized by cruel messenger of death. What can his dear America return but drop a tear upon his happy urn? Thou tomb shalt safe retain thy sacred trust till life divine reanimate his dust. It's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And I love the last phrase, thou tomb shalt safe retain thy sacred trust till life divine reanimate his dust. 17 years old, Phyllis Wheatley. Phyllis Wheatley. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dustin.